Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm Kimberly Johnson, half vaccinated in D.C. Today, my returning guest is author and lawyer Terry Canfield. Oh my God, we had a really cool conversation. I'm just going to say we talked about lawsuits concerning Trump for the most part, although we did talk about the Derek Chauvin trial first. But I think you're going to be really interested in hearing what she has to say about lawsuits that are pending concerning Trump. Really cool stuff. Now, you know, I always try to keep these intros short. I do have a new tier on Patreon that allows listeners to listen ad-free and intro-free, but I will get to that in a second. The Start Me Up podcast is an independent podcast supported by listeners, and it's woman-run. It's patrons who keep this show going, so thank you each and every one of you who supports the show. And if you do enjoy today's show, take a look at the About page. You'll see that most of the time I have conversations about politics with political people, but I also occasionally interview actors about their craft because I used to be one. Just go to patreon.com/startmeup. You'll see all the different tiers. And basically, I do 2 free shows every Monday and Wednesday, and they are followed up by What's Up With Me, Kimberly Johnson, for patrons only. That's kind of like my online diary. I'm not always political there. In fact, lately, I haven't been political at all, but it's just me talking about whatever I want to talk about. Once a month, I do a patrons only show with a guest. And it, like I said, if you sign up with that new tier that gets you into the ad-free shows, you get everything with that. Everything I just mentioned delivered to your email box, access to it. 2 free shows, 2 patrons-only shows with just me, 1 patrons-only show with a guest, and then obviously you get the ad-free. Again, patreon.com/startmeup. You can make a one-time donation by checking out the text in the Patreon description. I always include my email, and you can use that with PayPal. You can find Start Me Up on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever podcasts are found. Just stop by the iTunes app, Apple Podcast Store, and become a subscriber because it's free. And while you're there, if you like the show, please give me a rating and a review. I always need them. Thank you to everyone who has. And please now enjoy my conversation with Terry Canfield. Welcome back to the show, Terry.
Oh, thank you.
It's been some crazy news week, huh?
It's been, you know, I think that's an evergreen statement right now.
No kidding. Well, let's just, I know we're going to talk about something that you've been writing about, but before we get into that, let's talk about this verdict with George Floyd, Derek Chauvin. I know that, I mean, I feel like when I comment on this, I have 2 things to say about it, and then I want to see what you have to say. Number one, I'm a white person, so I have a certain amount of I think right now the black voices are the voices we have to listen to. And like, for instance, there was this guy on MSNBC, and I think it was what's his name? Velcher went up to him. Ali Velcher went up to him before the verdict, and they had a conversation, and this man was doing a painting, and he was explaining to Ali that he did not feel hopeful. Just based on his life experience, he was a black man, and he knows how it works. And so he didn't really feel very hopeful. Then Ali Velchi went up to him afterward and asked him, you know, how are you feeling? And of course, the man was saying that he felt like he felt like he was walking on air, and he was really pleased to see this. But he also felt that this is an anomaly. And I agree. I totally agree with him. But I also feel like I don't want to speak for people in the Black community, because I don't walk in their shoes and I don't know how they feel. And I absolutely agree that this particular, you know, because it was on video, even though Rodney King was also on video, it's a different time. But it's like the fact that the defense was not very good, the prosecution was very good. You know, what they presented was, I thought they were great. And then, you know, the fact that he was on camera and that these innocent or these bystanders came by and decided that they were going to, especially that little 9-year-old girl whose name I can't remember, but the one who shot the video, or however old she was, that made a huge difference. And it helped, because if this was not videotaped, he likely would, especially if anybody has seen the police report, it made it sound like everything was just fine and dandy. I don't have it in front of me, but the way that it was worded, mm-hmm. there was no mention of Derek Chauvin putting his knee on George Floyd's neck and basically suffocating him for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. So, but what I felt like on the positive note is that we're in this really terrible place in this country with white supremacy, and we're seeing, you know, the white cops murdering and assaulting Black people constantly. And this win for not the Black community, but for justice, I think is a, I'm hoping it's a positive step in a journey where we're going to see more positive and progressive action. And I'm not just talking about what Democrats or government's going to do. I'm talking about public sentiment, what we are willing to accept. I want to believe, and maybe that's naive of me, but I want to believe that this will set some kind of tone, even though I do feel this is an anomaly, but hopefully it'll set a tone so that these kinds of verdicts will not be anomalies. So I'm just wondering, how are you feeling about it?
Well, how about if I take a completely opposite viewpoint to do it?
Sure.
I'm a lawyer. On the other hand, I'm not, a couple things. The first is, I'm not seeing it as an anomaly, and I'm not seeing it as a turning point.
Okay.
So I'll just give you a quick story. First off, police lie all the time. And I did criminal defense work and a criminal defense appeals. And it's kind of common knowledge. And I'll tell you a quick story.
Okay.
Most of my clients, I represented only indigent. So I represented only people who had no money.
Yeah.
Which is on appeal, which gave me, which means that I very, very, to tell you the truth, I always represented people in underrepresented communities. Mm-hmm. And if I represented people who were white, they were very poor women who were abused. So I represented people who were needy in mm-hmm. some way.
Yeah.
And I had one time I was working one of my early jobs, I was working in a private law firm, which meant that people walked in with money, which very rarely in my career happened.
Right.
And a young woman walked in, a young white woman walked in, and she was completely shocked, because what had happened was she got a speeding ticket, but the cop gave it to her as a misdemeanor, which is serious, not a violation, mm-hmm. reckless driving, which mm-hmm. is actually a criminal, it's a misdemeanor. And he said that she was driving a certain speed in a parking lot, and she hadn't been. Mm-hmm. And she was like, she was completely shell-shocked, like, oh my God, the police officer actually lied. Well, and we were just like all sort of amused, because
right.
like it never occurred to this young woman that like police officers lie. And we actually got that charge dismissed because we did it with physics. We got an engineer who measured the parking lot and measured where it was that the cop said she was driving and the kind of engine that she had, mm-hmm. and that it was literally physically impossible for her to go that speed in this parking lot.
Wow.
So we got her off.
Right.
And but what I'll never forget is how completely shocked mm-hmm. she was. And how kind of naive it was. And it was like, I remember looking at this young woman, she's probably about 22. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and she's had enough money to walk into a private criminal defense firm. And I was working at the time, I was right out of law school, but I picked the best. So I was at a top-notch firm. Mm-hmm. And I knew she was never going to be the same.
Right.
Having seen that police lie.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, I don't see it as an anomaly in that usually the prosecution wins.
Yeah.
And if the prosecution doesn't win, there's some reason. And juries are usually pretty good. So it's very, very hard to convict a police officer in the line of duty.
Right.
It's particularly hard. I mean, if this wasn't a police officer, it would have been a slam dunk.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and the law does in a lot of ways need to protect police officers. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you would have charges brought against some of the Capitol Police.
Right.
So from the point of view of a criminal defense lawyer, the defense always loses, so I wasn't surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when my, my daughter, actually, I just throw in a brag, she's got into Harvard Law School.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. So
We're pretty proud of her. I taught her everything she knows.
Course you did.
you know that song from the Broadway version of Funny Girl where I taught her everything.
Oh, right, yes.
I get no credit. But at any rate, she was kind of following it. And everything that happened, she's like, oh my God, the defense said this. I said, it's not going to work. The defense always loses because the defense always loses. And one of the reasons is that prosecutors don't bring charges that they can't prove, which is why they didn't bring first degree.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they're doing. And also law enforcement and forensic is so good that very, very rarely does a prosecutor bring a case that they can't win. I think they have federal prosecutors actually have a 96% success rate.
Wow.
Because they drop the cases that are bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have to.
Right.
Okay. So they have a very high, so I was not surprised by the verdict. And the reason I don't think it's a turning point is because I think that there is, I believe the political psychologists who tell us that about 30% of the population have these tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
They like these lies. They like these conspiracy theories. They are hostile to minorities. Mm-hmm. And they believe, you know, that we've got about a third more now because they are in a hermetically sealed information universe. But we've got a certain population, a certain part of the population that's going to always have the very ugly reaction we saw last night coming out of the right-wing media.
Right.
Very, very ugly.
Yeah.
And then I think the corollary there is we have about 60% of the people, 50 to 70% of the people, but definitely more than half, who are not like that. And so I'm not sure that it's going to change much in the sense that the people who are racist and the people who are, thought that this was a terrible, that justice was not done, are not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's only, in other words, I think the battle stays exactly the same. Mm-hmm. In some ways, and I don't think it was an anomaly. Obviously, without the video camera, there wouldn't have been a conviction. But you can always say that without the evidence, you can't convict.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So, and we do have a presumption of innocence, and the burden of proof is on the prosecutor. One total idiot, I can't remember who it was saying the defense never even said he was innocent. They just said there wasn't enough evidence to prove his guilt. It's like, hello. You do not have to prove you're innocent.
Right.
Right. It's up to the government to have the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can be guilty of sin, and if they don't have enough evidence, you walk, because that's how the – and we want it that way.
Mm-hmm.
We want it that way. So, whether you can start requiring cameras on police officers now that more people have but it seems like it's sort of an obvious statement that if you don't have the evidence, you're not going to have a conviction.
Yes.
And it's,
well, that's true.
For a lot of crimes, there's no evidence.
Right. I think, though, in this particular case, I think why people are saying it is because there is so much in the police force. There is so much brutality that they've been able to get away with it because there is no evidence. And now we're starting to see that evidence. And I participated, a couple of years ago when I saw a black man being held down by white police officers, I pulled my car over and I joined, this group of people who were all filming. So I think that obviously you're right. If you don't have the evidence, you can't prove it. But it's the idea of now that there
how
are
how many
these,
more were there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I started with a story about this white woman.
Yeah, right.
Because you know, maybe a collective, there are people out there mm-hmm. who are kind of naive about yeah. the police, and they're like, I'm not. I right. was a criminal defense lawyer.
Yeah.
I mean, there are very good police officers. Mm-hmm. There are very good police officers. And there are a lot of bad ones. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you think about what makes someone want to be a police officer,
yeah,
there's sort of an authoritarianism
exactly.
in that. And good people become police officers because they say we need good people to be police officers.
Right. Yeah.
But it's always been a problem. Mm-hmm. But I think that's why I started with that story, that if it does mm-hmm. something good, it's going to wake up the people who were maybe a little naive about, mm-hmm. You know, they lie, they use excessive force, you know, yeah.
And it's not fair.
It also might, if there's a bad thing that came out of it, believe it or not, it might be that it takes some of the pressure off of police reform.
Huh. Interesting.
Because it's less, you know, like there's also a danger of people saying, oh, well, the system works.
Right. Well, yeah, but I don't know that that's going to happen. And the reason why is just because as this trial has gone on, more Black people have been, including children, have been murdered,
God, yeah.
unarmed. And, you know, and the argument is, well, they did drugs or they held a gun or they were in a gang or whatever it was. And it's like, you know, I mean, I've brought this up before, but just recently, I watched through the entire Orange is the New Black, and I kept commenting on how the prison guards just decide that they, you know, they're going to be able to beat up, rape, whatever, that when the person who's incarcerated is, you know, the punishment is doing the time. The punishment mm-hmm. is not being raped by guards. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we see this so much. And I mean, I don't necessarily think this is going to be a huge transition, like you were saying, and I agree with you. What I kind of hope for, though, is because we just, we're up against so much with the last 4 years, which really made white supremacy, not that it was totally hidden, but not everybody felt so comfortable being racist in public, mm-hmm. and now more people do. And so, like,
I think we also didn't realize how good of a fundraiser it is.
Exactly, exactly. And so I'm hoping, you know, again, maybe this is naive, but I'm hoping that, because what needs to happen, and I think about this every single night, is that public sentiment plays such a big part in where we go. I mean, granted, people have to show up and vote, and it really does come down to the laws that we have, the law of the land and all that. But so much of that is also based on what we as a country, as a nation collectively are willing to accept. And I just hope that even though this particular case is one case, and I know we're going to continue to see, you know, police officers getting away with literal murder, I can't help but hope that this particular incident and experience that we've had collectively and the world was watching will serve to kind of spark something in all of us, that because it seems like right now we're accepting too much. I don't like the word evil, but I'm just going to use it because to me evil sounds religious and I don't want to make it in. It's just we're accepting so much that's wrong. And, you know, I mean, we're never going to be perfect. No nation is ever going to be perfect, but we could be better. And that's why I speak up, whatever, because that's my hope. I don't know that we can, I don't know that we're ever going to get to a point where I would like to see us, but I would like to improve it. I would like to see improvement. And I hope that people can take a look at this and say, you know what, we need to change. We need to make changes, which would eventually lead to laws, you know, whether it's, you know, restoring the Voting Rights Act or, you know, passing H.R. 1 or doing things that, and I've said this too before, I don't think the Democrats are perfect. I don't, but they're the only party right now that's working for
right.
the people. And when they make mistakes, we need to call them out on it and say, okay, you've made a mistake. Let's do better, and just keep pushing them to do better because they'll listen. Republicans don't care. So anyway, that's what I'm hopeful about. And I feel like maybe I'm being a little naive, but I'm just coming from a place of exhaustion. Like, seriously, right now I could cry because I'm so fucking exhausted watching constant bad news and seeing the Black community being treated so horribly. And I mean, women too. Women in the Black community specifically, but women are still not in the Constitution. And it's like, it gets to, just, man, when you're in it all day long, it's a lot to take.
Right.
So anyway, but okay. Well, one of the things that I know you're working on, and you're going to have to really just take the lead on this, and I will have questions for you, but you wrote something called Blasingame v. Trump. And you're talking basically about the fact that McConnell is pushing off any responsibilities for Trump to the courts. And it was after he was impeached the second time. So basically McConnell's just going, it's up to the courts to take care of these things. So you wrote about that. Go.
All right. Yes. McConnell, very notably at the end of the impeachment hearing, he said that Trump was morally and practically responsible for the insurrection.
Yeah.
But Congress wasn't going to do anything about it because that's up to the courts, which was right. It was two things. One is the courts is also a valid place to bring cases against Trump, but that was a complete, he was completely, you know, shrugging off his responsibility because the accountability you have in Congress was different and should have happened. But he did say it's up to the courts. So people are bringing lawsuits. And I'm looking at a lot of them. And the Blasingame versus Trump was particularly interesting. I don't think it's the easiest conviction. I think there's other ways to get even easier convictions. But the Blasingame versus Trump is basically some of the police officers who suffered injuries are suing Trump for the injuries. And the this is an interesting case for a lot of reasons. It was filed about 3 weeks ago. So our understanding of what happened on that day is growing as we learn more. And like everybody else, I watched it on TV. And when you watched it on TV that day, we didn't really get a sense of what was happening.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew it was kind of awful, but we really didn't know. And one of the things, first thing that's interesting about this case is it's litigation, by the way, you just think of litigation as differing stories told from differing viewpoints. So litigation, you know, the kindest way to talk about litigation is it's two different stories from, it's the same story from two viewpoints. So, you know, you can play a scene different ways as an actress, right? Or you can, and so you've got different ways of seeing the same thing happening. And what the police officers describe in horrific detail, what happened from their viewpoint, which was right in the fights. And it was really, really horrific. So the first thing that that lawsuit does is it gives us a whole new perspective on what they experienced. And they have actual injuries. And so the second thing about this lawsuit is that a lot of times with lawsuits and these sort of cases that are overlap with politics is that a lot of times it's hard for the plaintiff to prove that they have standing. And what that means is to bring a lawsuit, you have to have been personally affected or injured. Which makes emoluments kind of difficult, like who has standing to sue. So, and some people are, there are suits being brought against Trump that he violated, you know, civil rights acts with, you know, with this insurrection. But there's a little bit, you know, there's just sort of this practical problem of standing. Well, the police officer suffered actual injury, so they have standing. So it's, you know, they're there with actual injuries. And that's also a problem with a lot of these cases is that an element of any of these cases is that you have to actually have damages. So if you lie about me and you say something that isn't true, I guess technically that's defamation. You hurt my reputation, right? But if you haven't caused me any damage, I can't win a lawsuit because you pay. Lawsuits are you pay for the damage you cause. They're not supposed to be punishment. So if you do something that you shouldn't have done, and you cause no damage, then you can. So if you go plowing through a red light and nobody's around, you can get a ticket for that.
Right.
Right. And you could even get maybe a misdemeanor moving violation. You could get something serious. But nobody can sue you.
Right, exactly. Because no one was hurt.
Because you didn't hurt anyone. Yeah. But on the other hand, if you plow through the intersection and you cause an injury, then you are liable for that injury.
Yeah.
And so because these officers were injured, they actually have a pretty strong – I mean, they have – that part of the lawsuit is strong. The other thing is that they were police officers. Mm-hmm. And this is – you know, they're the good police officers. You know, there's always good and bad. But – the Blue Lives Matters people, where Blue Lives is obviously just an anti-Black slogan,
right,
have kind of a hard time with this one, right? Because you've got police officers injured in the line of duty. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, you could say that these are sympathetic plaintiffs, mm-hmm, on both sides of the political spectrum. And when you have as a lawyer, I can tell you that it really helps to have a sympathetic plaintiff.
Yeah.
And the reason I can tell you, or represent somebody sympathetic, because I mentioned my practice was limited to indigents, mm-hmm, appealing. Mm-hmm. My clients had always were in big trouble. Let's put it that way. Yeah. And by the time they got to the appeal, they had lost at the trial level.
Oh, wow.
So they were in super big trouble. And, you know, I like to joke that all my clients are innocent, but
right,
they really probably weren't. So right. So let's just say that I have had a career of representing unsympathetic clients. Mm-hmm. So these are sympathetic, you know, it's because they're, you know, it's harder for the Blue Lives Matters to trash them. Mm-hmm. So for all these reasons. And then the other thing that's interesting about this case is that the legal issue is the same. The legal issue is, was he the cause of these, mm-hmm, injuries? Mm-hmm. And another way to say it is, but for Trump's behavior, would this have happened?
Right.
So if Trump hadn't done the things he did, would they be injured?
Yeah.
So you're proving the question of the hour. The question is, can you prove that Trump, you know, was Trump responsible for the insurrection? Can you prove in court that Trump was responsible for the insurrection? Mm-hmm. And this is the same legal question, but it's a civil case rather than a criminal case. Mm-hmm. And the reason that matters is because the burden of proof is much lower. Mm. So in a criminal case, the prosecution has to prove each element beyond a reasonable doubt. And it's the highest standard, mm-hmm, which is makes sense because in a criminal case, a person is about to be punished,
yeah,
which means state-inflicted, mm-hmm, pain. Mm-hmm. And that's serious business. Mm-hmm. So we have said all through our legal system, all the best parts of our legal system has said we'd rather let guilty people walk than punish innocent people. So we have a very high standard in criminal cases. Mm-hmm. But in civil cases, you don't stand to lose your life.
Right.
In a capital case, you don't stand to lose your freedom. Mm-hmm. All it's about, and there's very little punitives in civil cases, punishment. Mostly what you have to do in a civil case is simply pay for the damage you caused.
Yeah, right.
So there's really no insanity defense. Mm-hmm. If you went crashing through the intersection and you go crashing into a storefront and you do $10,000 worth of property damage, you have no insanity defense.
Right.
You have to pay. Yeah. You still have to pay for the damage you caused.
Yeah.
So, because you caused it. So the standard of proof is so much lower. And in a civil case, the standard of proof is what we call a preponderance of the evidence, mm-hmm, which just basically says more likely than not. Hmm. So 51%.
Yeah.
So if you've got a balance scale, yes, no. Mm-hmm. If you just go 51% toward guilty, you get a conviction.
Wow.
Or you get a judgment,
right,
against the,
right,
person. So very a much lower standard of proof. And so there's kind of other reasons, but you can see why I looked at this and I thought it was a breakthrough case in terms of the perspective. It was a breakthrough case in terms of, and then the other thing is that other things about civil case is that you can't stand on the fifth. I mean, you can. It's a little more complicated than that. You can only refuse to take the stand if you have criminal liability.
Oh.
So, okay. So the only way for Trump to not testify is to say I have criminal liability in this matter. Now, here's the other tricky part, or cool part, or nifty part, is that in a criminal trial, if somebody takes the Fifth, you cannot hold that against the person. The person, you have a right to remain silent, and the jury is instructed not to draw any inferences from that.
Right.
Because because you do not have to prove your case. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times somebody might be innocent, but there just would be a mess up there on the witness stand.
Yeah.
So, but in a civil case, you can take that into account.
Oh, that's really interesting. Well, I might be jumping ahead, but in this particular case, if they win, what do they win?
They win damages. They get money.
Okay, so that would be hospital bills and things like that?
Yeah, okay. Right. And also, they are asking for punitives. But okay. Also, what you get is a judgment against Trump where a court found that he caused the insurrection.
Oh, wow. Now, would anything to do with the criminal?
There's actually one other little point I want to throw out, is that another value for this case is that discovery in civil cases is wide open, because in criminal cases, you have to have a reason to search somebody. Mm-hmm. You can't just invade their privacy to convict them of a crime. Mm-hmm. We really don't want the police able to do that. Mm-hmm. So, but in civil cases, it's not about punishment. It's about who pays for the damage. So the court wants to get to the truth. Mm-hmm. So what this means is that people have to testify. So a lot of the evidence that the house managers in the impeachment trial were not able to get their hands on, the court in a civil case can get. And that would include, remember those people, close advisors to Trump, who told reporters that he was like joyful watching the insurrection on TV? Uh-huh. Those people could get called. Records, telephone records. You can't hide that stuff.
Wow.
Unless you say you have criminal liability.
Yeah.
And then the jury can take that into account. And so if you have a preponderance of the evidence, right, where all you have to do is feel slightly more convinced than not, mm-hmm. then if the defendant says, yeah, well, I'm not showing any of my stuff because I have criminal liability, mm-hmm. that's kind of all over.
So, okay, now give me an example of criminal, like, if Trump were to say, I'm not going to answer that because of criminal liability, mm-hmm. Meaning that does that mean he's saying, I'm not going to answer this because I might show you that I'm guilty? Is mm-hmm. that's basically what it
means is that so the Fifth Amendment says no person shall ever be compelled to be a witness against themselves. Mm-hmm. And this is a really good thing, because they used to torture people into confessing mm-hmm. all the way through the 1950s. Hmm. Actually, the blacks in the South were tortured into confessing to crimes they didn't do. Mm-hmm. So it's really good that you don't have to be a witness against yourself. The courts have said that that doesn't apply in civil cases. But you can stand on the Fifth in a civil case if you have criminal liability for this behavior.
So what could be an example of that criminal liability in Trump's case particular?
Oh, that he incited a riot in violation of D.C. law.
Okay. Now, let me just ask, because this could totally be jumping ahead too, but let's say that happens. Let's say the civil case finds Trump guilty. Could then that civil case be used in a criminal trial to prove that he did it?
No, because it's a different standard of proof.
Okay.
But what it does, it might not get him in a criminal case, but that's kind of bad publicity. and there's actually another thing that comes into play, which is the 14th Amendment says mm-hmm. that if you have incited a violent insurrection against the government, you can't run for office again.
Oh,
and there's some question about how that's determined.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody really knows, because that was actually passed after the Civil War to make sure that people who were Confederates and attacked the government couldn't run for office again. It was a way of keeping Confederates out of office. It didn't work all that well, because the actual politicians weren't the ones that lifted the guns.
Right.
Right. But that was the purpose of it. And so we have it. And so, you know, I've heard some speculation from lawyers. Well, how do you enforce that now? Well, you need a, it's pretty clear you need a court ruling or some kind of a verdict. So had Trump been convicted in the Senate trial, mm-hmm. in the impeachment trial, then the 14th Amendment, I think, would no doubt come into play. Mm-hmm. But one question, and I don't know the answer to because it's never been really happened, but if Trump had a civil finding in a civil court that he incited this violent riot against Congress, would the 14th Amendment come into play? Mm. But it would also just be a judgment. It would be a judgment against him. Now, you know, a civil case, you know, I would expect that Trump is going to try to settle this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that he doesn't have to face discovery. But that is a very interesting case for all these reasons. There, I mean, there's other things too. The case was brought in Washington, D.C. Hmm. Guess where Trump would not want to face a jury?
Yeah, really? In Washington, D.C.
I mean, he'd love to. You know, and there's no way to move the case. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that his lawyers are going to do is say, how do we get this case out of Washington, D.C. to, say, someplace like Florida?
Yeah.
Where at least he has a, you know, sort of a hope mm-hmm. of getting a somewhat sympathetic jury. They can't because the wrongdoing occurred. Mm-hmm. You know, the wrongdoing was part of the speeches he gave at the rally.
Yeah.
And so if you hold a rally someplace, then you automatically subject yourself to the laws of that jurisdiction.
Oh, wow.
So Trump can't say I'm a Floridian, I'm in Florida, I'm moving this to Florida. He can't because as they say in, you know, sort of the world of civil procedure, is that he availed himself of the laws of that
right.
forum. So if you go to Montana and you hold a riot and you tell people to get violent, then Montana has jurisdiction over
it. Yes.
Which makes sense.
Yes.
So the other problem for him is this is not in the best place for him right. to face a jury.
Now
I'm kind of eager to see what happens.
Do we know what they're asking for? As far as compensation?
Well, we don't, because all we have is they say $75,000, and people on Twitter read this, like, how come that's all? Well, that's a magic number. The way you get into federal court, as opposed to a state local court, is if you have one of the criteria for getting to federal court is there has to be at least $75,000 in damage. And they also say whatever the court finds reasonable. So they haven't put a big number.
So then if he were to, like, okay, so what's the deal with, he says, I want to settle this. Here's $75,000.
They don't have to take it.
Okay.
And they didn't just ask for $75,000. I can open up the thing and tell you exactly. I think I have this somewhere around here. What the prayer is, all this outdated language, like the prayer, prayer for relief.
Right.
Judgment. So they want judgment against him on all counts. They want compensatory damage in an amount consistent with the evidence to be shown at trial in excess of $75,000 for each, plus interest and costs. So, and then they also ask for punitives.
Okay.
So punitives is where numbers can get big.
Okay.
But there's kind of a little bit of a bias against punitives because you don't want a plaintiff to have a windfall. You just want the plaintiff to be compensated for their mm-hmm. damages. But also the other thing is, how do you measure damages? These guys are traumatized.
Exactly.
So these numbers could get high. And then it says such other relief as the court and jury deem necessary and just. So that's all boilerplate standard language for mm-hmm. we're going to get as much as we can. And we really don't know. We don't know the amount yet.
So
will be determined.
Do you think that these people in this lawsuit are more concerned with getting compensated or more concerned with holding Trump accountable?
I think holding Trump accountable, because if all they wanted was $100,000, mm-hmm. you could get that.
Right. Wow.
You know, I mean, I could get that. Dear Mr. Trump, I represent these guys.
Right.
We, you know, and all Trump would have to say is sign, you can have a settlement agreement that binds people to silence.
Right, exactly.
As part of the agreement.
Yeah, and he's so familiar with those.
It would be very it would be very easy to get them a bunch of money.
Okay. Well, that's
so
interesting.
So I don't believe
right.
so, but that's just a guess.
Yeah.
Under this. I would imagine these guys are, you know, that's why they want a judgment.
Right.
A judgment against, and I kind of like seeing that. I have it up on my screen right now, so I have I pulled up the actual complaint. Judgment against Donald J. Trump
yes.
on all counts.
And how many counts are there?
I have to scroll back because count five. But
okay.
Fifth was punitives, that they're looking for punitives. Violation of public safety. So basically what they're doing is, okay, incitement of a riot. So that's a DC. Now he's got some, Trump has some defenses here.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think they're lame, but that's because I've always been on the side that loses because I represented people who already
right.
lost the trial.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm used to, I was never the prosecutor.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. I was up against prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
And so, let's see, directing intentional infliction of emotional distress, aiding and abetting. If we have time, I can sort
sure.
of segue, like aiding and abetting. But these are not the hardest things to prove
mm-hmm.
either.
No, they're not.
Some of
it's
these
all
are
on
not
camera.
The hardest thing to prove.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, during that particular day, we were not aware of everything was going on. But then, especially when the Democrats aired that video footage kind of timeline showing him at that rally, everything that he was saying, I mean, that would be used, I would imagine, in court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it all comes in.
Right.
Plus he has to explain why he doesn't testify.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask you, too. Okay, so what happens if he refuses to testify? Does he get arrested?
No.
What happens if he refuses?
Absolutely not. If he refuses to testify, then nothing happens. I mean, that's not going to be used as evidence in a criminal trial.
No, I mean.
Or in an investigation.
I mean, in the civil.
The only thing that does is the jury can say, we can find him guilty in the civil. So you cannot use somebody's refusal to talk in a criminal matter against that person.
Right, but I'm talking about in this particular trial, which is civil, right?
Yes.
So if he says, I don't want to testify, then he doesn't have to testify?
Right.
And then, but...
No, only if he says he has to tell the jury, I am not testifying, because if I testify, I run the danger of... I have criminal liability in these matters.
So
the jury then gets to say, oh, they can use that in determining whether to find him
guilty
to charge with in this civil matter. So civil court is entirely different from criminal court.
Right.
So now
that could sway their decision, though, for him to say, I'm not going to testify because I
yes.
could be criminally liable.
Yes.
And that's going to tell
yes.
a jury, oh, looks like he's guilty.
Right.
Maybe. Okay.
Right.
Interesting.
In the civil case. In the
right.
civil case.
Right. Right. Right.
So in a civil case, you can take that into account. You know, take my example of crashing through the intersection.
Mm-hmm.
So if you crash through the intersection and cause some damage, it's a lot easier to find you civilly liable to pay mm-hmm. for the damage than to punish you. So, for example, let's suppose you go, you know, person A goes crashing through the intersection and causes some property damage. And they say, oh, well, I took my doctor prescribed this drug for me. And then you go trace it back to the doctor. And the doctor says, yes, I prescribed this drug. And it was indicated. So the doctor is not at fault.
Mm-hmm.
And then you trace it back even further. And what happened in the last month is that the drug companies are finding out that this drug causes erratic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And they hadn't fully tested it or called it out. So in other words, you could have a situation where a person does something like that and cannot be held criminally liable because there's not evidence of criminal
right.
intent.
Right.
On the other hand, none of that matters in a civil case. You crash through the intersection. So in a civil case, it's like, who pays for the damage? All right. So these officers have serious injuries. And to put it sort of crudely, whose insurance company has to pay?
Yeah. Right.
And the officers don't, their insurance company, they don't want to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And also, who's going to pay for the, you know, who's going to cover, who's going to compensate them? Mm-hmm. So it's in the civil case, it's a lower standard of proof, and the jury can take into account the fact mm-hmm. that Trump is not testifying, and it's going to make Trump look bad. I mean, we have civil courts, we have criminal courts, and we have the court of public opinion. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the headlines if Trump takes the Fifth because he might be criminally liable?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I
think Tucker Carlson's head will explode.
Right. I mean, so in other words, it's going to be, I'm not one of those people who is like hanging my hat on Trump being like hauled off to prison.
Right.
Because he's an old guy, and I'm just like, that's just like not how I think.
Yeah.
But I do think that that would be some crazy headline. and it would be very hard for Trump to live it down. So what's going to happen? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I know that it's a very interesting lawsuit for all the reasons I just explained.
Right.
Because the legal issue is the same as the criminal legal issue.
Yeah.
But remember with the O.J. Simpson that he was not criminally convicted, mm-hmm. but he was in mm-hmm. civil court. And that's purely because of the burden of proof, mm-hmm. that there was enough evidence to say beyond a mm-hmm. preponderance of an evidence. But if the jury has a reasonable doubt, they must not convict. Mm-hmm. That's what our whole criminal justice system relies on, that you have to be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. So what defense lawyers do is they try to create a reasonable doubt.
Right, right, right.
And so
wow.
if they succeeded in creating a even if you're going, oh my God, the guy was guilty of sin, if the jurors have a reasonable doubt, they can't convict. That's just what the judge tells them. But the standard in a civil trial is lower. So that's how OJ could get then sued and lose on like what wrongful death. I can't remember something like that.
Yeah. I'm curious to know, do you know when this might take place? Do they have a date or anything?
Well, no, but these things take a long time. Okay.
Like what would you guess time frame before we could see actually an assembled court and proceedings underway?
A court. Well, okay. So first you have pretrial motions where Trump is going to try to get rid of the case. He's going to say so you're going to have pretrial motions, and then that's going to set a court calendar.
Right.
And these courts right now are totally overloaded. Mm-hmm. So those things can take a month each. And then if there's briefing, then the opposite party gets a month to respond. And then the reply, I think, is usually about 10 days.
Okay.
So any issues that come up can take a month or two.
Yeah.
And then there's all kinds of pretrial, and then discovery can take a while. Mm-hmm. So in complicated cases, discovery can take a very long time. In other words, don't hold your breath.
Okay.
The next thing we're going to see is a motion to dismiss. Mm-hmm. And that's where you say those are the motions that all the Trump voter lawsuits lost on. Mm-hmm. So they didn't get past a motion to dismiss. It's really hard to dismiss a case mm-hmm. up front. It has to be a super, super bad case, and this isn't.
Right. Now,
But they're still going to file it, and you're still going to have mm-hmm. to give time for, you know, the plaintiffs to file an answer, and then you're going to have a lot of squabbling over discovery, where the plaintiffs are going to want certain discovery, and then the Trump camp is going to say you can't have it for this reason, and mm-hmm. then they're going to do some briefing on that, and then the judge is going to decide.
Now, is discovery kept from us, or do we get to find out what they find?
I don't think it's kept from us.
Okay,
but that's a good question. Yeah. I've never handled a public case, and I don't know the law in DC, so that's a good question. I would imagine that it will be hard to keep that stuff secret.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking in terms of, I don't know, you know, just in case this takes a really long time. I mean, one thing I don't even remember who I was talking to. It might have been Eric Garland. I don't know. But because he's under the impression that we're going to see some convictions. He thinks Trump could be convicted for, you know, tax fraud, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of up in the air about it. But one of the things that he brought he talked about was that, you know, obviously time is going to be involved in this, which so many of us, just regular people who want to see some kind of justice after this nightmare we've all experienced. So I think that for that, just that alone, where people want to see some kind of justice, we want to see something. I think that it's good that these cases are going to take a little while, because as we approach 2022 and 2024, you know, the public seems to forget stuff pretty easily. Although I don't know that anybody's really going to forget what's happened in the last 5 years. But still, it's when it's fresh in your mind and you're just about ready to vote, I think that that's, it could work to the favor of, I would say, democracy. You know what I mean?
So, and also, the other thing is, we don't want justice to be fast food rushed.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. You know, these things just do take time.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, making the historical record. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to, you know, to need the truth out. And one of the, you know, the final thing actually to say about a case like this is, if it does nothing else, it gets the truth out.
Yes.
And the truth needs to come out, because, you know, how this is all going to be remembered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are people who would like the truth not to come out. Mm-hmm. And so the truth coming out, I mean, the truth is, you know, fundamentally how you save democracy is through truth.
Right. Wow. So I saw you the other day posting about, gosh, I wish I could remember, because it was a couple of weeks ago, and you were outlining, and, you know, it had to do with the insurrection. And I don't know if you were specifically talking about this case, and it might have been, because I think I just actually quoted you on the show, but it was one of your tweets talking about how you didn't necessarily think Trump was going to be held accountable, at least criminally, and I'm guessing for the insurrection, because he had so many outs. Like, for instance, he could say,
no, I didn't. I wouldn't have said that. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, then I'm not remembering it. I remember, but I do remember what you were talking about, is that Trump could say, and so maybe I just, as far as not being criminally charged is what I have wrong, but that he could say, well, a lot of people use the word fight.
Oh, no. Okay. I know what I was doing.
Okay.
I was telling you what his defenses were, but those aren't going to work. Those are his defenses.
Then I'm remembering wrong.
He does have defenses. I mean, he has defenses, but that, like, really means nothing, because everybody has a defense. You know, you always have,
right.
You rarely don't have a defense,
yeah.
But he will say, but, you know, but some of these defenses, like, you know, actually he will raise a First Amendment defense.
Yeah.
That's probably his strongest defense, you know, so I think I was more warning people. It's not like, you know, these things are always a little murkier than they look like. And sometimes people kind of fly off the handle, you know, like when I guess a judge said, well, it looks like Maxine Waters gave an issue on appeal.
Yeah.
And an issue on appeal means zero. because I brought appeals.
Right.
The fact that you have an issue on appeal means, like, zero, because appeals usually lose because the presumption is that it was done correctly at the trial level, and you have to show that the error was harmful. You have to show, I mean, it's a very high bar on appeal. And he was kind of shrugging it off and saying, well, what she did manage to do is get the defense an issue on appeal. And anybody who's done criminal appeals knows that that means nothing. But all, I mean, you can come up with an issue on appeal. Like, criminal defense attorneys have been known to scrape the bottom of the barrel for issues on appeal. Trust me. Because our system really does want to make sure.
Yeah.
You want to make sure. And so an issue, so people got all unglued, and, and so, you know, he will raise defenses. He's not going to roll over.
Of course. Yeah.
So those were the defenses he's going to raise. But I actually believe that he will be, you know, I think, I know what you were, I do think that there are, that criminally charging Trump is somewhat problematic it's somewhat problematic because of the optics of it, the former president. I mean, it can happen, but I think that the haul him off to jail is not how we should be talking anyway. We should be talking, let's follow the facts.
Yeah.
let it all come out. I mean, do I think that he incited that riot? Yes. But I think there are ways to convict him. There are ways criminally to convict him of this. Mm-hmm. But the easier it is to convict him, the lower the level of crime, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So for example, we have, conspiracy law where, mm-hmm. where it's really easy to pull anyone in who knew it was happening. So the easier it is to get a criminal conviction, right. the less satisfying people are going to find it.
A lot of people that I talk to, whether they're lawyers or not, seem to believe that if we're going to ever see Trump convicted, it's going to be about money. It's just because they liken it to the mafia. You know, like the mafia bosses are not getting arrested and convicted for killing people. It's always about the money. And
well, do you know why? Well, okay. I want to explain why that
okay.
is.
Okay.
Okay. The reason is because when the evidence is documentary, it's easier to get a conviction, and right. you don't have the problem of a juror just not wanting to convict.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So put another way, there's different kinds of evidence, right? And so testimony is evidence, but with testimony, the jury can legitimately decide not to believe the testimony.
Mm, okay. Right.
And a jury can't on appeal say the jury believed testimony they shouldn't have believed. Mm-hmm. You can't say that on appeal because mm-hmm. the trial court is where the facts are found. But what you can do on appeal is say that the jury went against the weight of the evidence. So if the evidence is documentary,
yeah,
then it's easier to convict because gotcha. You're not relying on testimony.
Right.
And gotcha. that's why Manafort was Manafort had a life of crime.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to prove.
Mm-hmm.
And we want crimes to be hard to prove.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, you know, we don't want to, we want to defund the police, right? We don't want to be like arresting everybody for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason that they could get him on financial crimes is because it's easier to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to worry about like holdout jurors because if you present in financial crimes yeah. are usually easy to prove.
It's
so if you
math.
Present the evidence and it's
yeah.
there,
yeah.
a juror can't say, well, I don't believe it.
Right.
Because
if it's
you have to have
yeah.
some evidence not to
yeah.
believe it. Like there has to be some reason not to believe it.
Yeah.
You can't just like say, I don't believe it. Where you can say, I mm-hmm. just totally don't believe this
mm-hmm.
testimony. So I think that's the reason. And that's the reason why some other like kind of lesser, sort of accessory crimes,
mm-hmm.
you know, like aiding and abetting or, you know, being involved in a conspiracy. Some of these crimes that remove him
mm-hmm.
somewhat are also easier to prove because it's a lot harder to prove,
yeah.
you know, to get him on the violence that happened. Because
yes.
when he
right.
says, well, I told him to be peaceful, it's a lot
exactly.
harder to
right.
get him on that.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
so,
and that makes sense, right.
So that's the reason. I mean, if he's going to be convicted on, you know, something lighter, something easier, it's because you don't want to. The last thing you want to do is bring a case to court and lose.
Yeah.
Because that would better not to charge him.
Right.
Than to get an acquittal.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that totally makes sense, and that would be extremely disappointing. And you know, I mean, I totally agree with you as far as. It's not, I mean, ideally, we wouldn't want to be arresting and convicting former presidents, ideally. But, you know, this guy was egregious and so awful in so many ways. And, you know, I can just say from my own experience, and I'm not talking for everybody, but I know that a lot of people feel the way I do, just especially people that I live with or people that are in my inner circle, that this is, you know, back when I first started getting involved in politics, which I think I came kind of late to the game, really being vocal about it. I started paying attention in 2000 with the Hanging Chad fiasco, but it was like a slow where I wasn't always paying attention, but maybe I would watch Rachel and, you know, I would always listen to my mother who was always a junkie. So I always kind of understood the basics of what were going on, what was going on. But it wasn't until 2012 that I started doing what I do right now, being a big mouth on the internet and things like that and having strong opinions and speaking up. But, you know, so my experience in this realm has not been like, for instance, my boyfriend has been writing about politics now for, I think, since 2004. And so he's, you know, he's written for HuffPost. He's been a blogger. He's a podcaster. And he even said to me the other day, it's like, it's changed now. The political climate in this country is so different. And, you know, ever since Trump came along, and I mean, I could say, I started basically when the Tea Party came along. And I think that, you know, one leads to the other leads to the other. And the Tea Party helped lead to Trump. I mean, you could say Reagan, you know, everything they did, one thing leads to another. But it's like the experience of being somebody who talks about politics now online or anywhere, it's draining. It's always been, you know, filled with emotion and passion and anger and all of that. But it's like, I felt like, okay, for 4 years, I was totally frightened that this country would be stolen from us, that democracy would be gone, and we'd be heading into a Russian oligarchy. So Joe Biden won. Yay, so grateful. But we're still living, if you're paying close attention to how Republicans are behaving, we have to save the democracy from what they want to do, which is basically the same thing Trump wanted to do. And
right.
So,
I know, I totally agree. Yeah. The two things to say about that is that there are reasons to convict Trump. Mm-hmm. And I believe that he will ultimately, if he lives long enough, face convictions, even though he's a former president. Because he's a former president, for all these reasons, it has to move very, very carefully. Mm-hmm. The evidence has to be airtight.
Totally agree.
And nothing can be charged where he might be acquitted or have a case thrown out.
Yes.
At the same time, although there are good reasons to do it, that isn't what saves the democracy. Because that's not what's going to sway all of the
that's true.
All of the
You're
staff.
Right.
So there are reasons to do it, but one of the things that, you know, I just caution is that I believe that he will be charged in relation to this riot. Mm-hmm. I do. I believe that he's going to be charged in a way that they know they can get a conviction, mm-hmm. no matter who the jury is. Mm-hmm. So what that means is they're going to need documentary evidence beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
And that's going to be hard because he mm-hmm. insulated himself.
Wow.
But I believe there's a way to do it. And I believe it needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that's going to be what saves the democracy, or that democracy hangs on whether that happens.
No, you know what? I don't think the democracy hangs on it, but I still firmly believe that there is a collective opinion, collective energy of all of us that, you know, mm-hmm. sets expectations. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if a conviction would maybe set, you know, but there would be, okay, there would be that, setting expectations, but there's also just in the case of like George Floyd, when you see justice served in some way, mm-hmm. that somebody is being held accountable for their criminal, for their whatever actions, it serves as a relief.
And right, for 60% of the people.
Right. Yeah, and I totally get that.
The other 40%, it's going to light them on fire in terms of hate and anger.
Yeah.
So it's and I do think it needs to happen. But it's the time frame. People have to understand that they're building the case and they're not going to bring anything that's not airtight. And there's just so I actually think the Georgia might be the case that breaks through too. There's a lot of things out there. There are a lot of things out there. The idea that he's going to somehow skate on all of this is just completely preposterous.
So when you say Georgia, do you mean the election? Do you mean the election, or do you mean what they're doing right now in Georgia?
No, what I mean is the criminal case that the DA down there in Atlanta is bringing.
Okay, gotcha.
Against Trump.
Interesting. Okay.
I believe that case is looking, same thing, mm-hmm. that we haven't heard about it now for a couple of weeks or a month or two.
Yeah.
And that's because these investigations take time.
Yeah.
And the last thing that this DA in Atlanta, Georgia wants to do is charge Trump with something and can't make it stick for some reason.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. So I think there's a lot happening back behind the scenes.
Yes, I agree with you. And I think you're right. I mean, I'm glad that I can ask you that I get your lawyer ear, because it's like, you know, I know that there are a lot of us out there that are just kind of going on emotion as opposed to going on how the system actually works. And it's good to know. It's good to know from your insider kind of knowledge on this, you know, how to, because it's very easy for somebody who's not a lawyer to go, yeah, Trump's going to get arrested. And it's like, we don't know what And you're right that if he gets arrested, it's not going to solve all our problems.
And it's not going to be dramatic.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to be like hauled off and he is a former president and there's optics. And so it's not going to be like, you know, I think that some people were like kind of joking about like, There was a thing on the on Twitter, left-leaning Twitter, social media for a while that was sort of, turning the lock her up into lock him up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some ways you want to make sure it doesn't look vengeful or angry.
Yes, right. Yes, you know, exactly.
Justice works much better when it's calm and deliberate and respectful of the office.
Yeah.
If it's all those things, then it's more believable. So an arrest would probably his age and I mean, there's probably ways to keep him at home. A judge would order him not to have any social media. You know, I mean, there's probably they would do the gentlest things first.
Gotcha. And that makes sense.
Which they do anyway. We don't like pretrial detention because pretrial detention is really putting someone in jail before they're convicted. So anyway, I think it'll happen. I think it'll be, you know, less fireworks, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see. But I think when these prosecutors, especially down there in Atlanta and in D.C., when they have an airtight case, they're going to bring it.
Wow. Well, that's something to look forward to, because definitely it would be a cathartic experience to see that happening. And I mean, oh my God, I think it would, I think there will be some kind of fireworks only because tensions are so high and I don't see that changing very soon. I think we've got this divided political, again, atmosphere. But the sad thing is it's like, it's not a political, I mean, it's political in that it's Republicans, Democrats, whatever, but it's just, oh my God, it's not political. It's literally about like changing how this country is run, which, okay, fine, you can call it politics, but it's not about like policy, I should say. When it comes to political, it's like we're not debating policy. What is happening is we're just seeing white supremacy. We're seeing hatred. We're seeing propaganda and lies. And it's just, oh my God, just going back to what I said before, it's just completely exhausting. So it would be nice if we could see some kind of a justice or some kind of justice in any of this, because I think the bottom line for me, I know that, and you're right about the 40% of people, but I think that 60%, because I mean, we got Joe Biden elected and he's implementing all kinds of policies that's helpful for people. And hopefully we'll bring the economy back and we'll see, you know, people are getting vaccinated and we're seeing positives. And then, you know, I would hope that if we are able to see some kind of justice here with the Trump administration, that it serves as like, I guess it's not going to solve all our problems, but it would satisfy that part of us that always see criminals, especially, you know, that old tired story of white male criminals getting off. It's like, just, I mean, we've seen
And actually, I have to stop you there. It's not true. There's this thing like, oh, if you're white, you get off. There's a disproportionately large number of black people in prison, but there are a lot of white people in prison.
Well, that is true. But so, I mean, I think I'm talking about like high profile, wealthy people who are able to buy themselves. Like, for instance, you look at somebody like Trump.
I cringe when I hear that. I'm sorry. I cringe when I hear it. I've represented plenty of, I mean, back when
You're talking about indigent people, right?
No, no. I mean, go look at the statistics. I mean, more indigents, but the idea that if you're white, you get off is
I'm not talking about just being white. I'm talking about,
you know, white and rich. I mean, there are plenty of white wealthy people who go to jail. I mean, the thing is that white wealthy people, you know, blue corporate level crime is harder to. It's just harder to catch than crime out on, you know, than, I mean, there's reasons for that. And I cringe when I hear like, you can say something that's false the other direction too. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's like if you want to be accurate, you would say that the criminal justice system falls more harshly on people of color and indigents.
Right.
And there are a lot of reasons for that. And one of them is systemic racism, but there are other reasons as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one reason, like just to give you an example, if you are rich and you live in a great big house and you have, and there's a lot of room between you and your neighbors, you're less likely to have the police called if you're doing something in there you shouldn't do.
Right.
And if you're in a crowded place and you're doing something you shouldn't do, you're going to have enemies in that area. I did some work representing Indian women. They called themselves Indians, so I used their word.
Okay.
In Pomo Indians. And actually, one of my clients said she liked the word Indian. So I have to remember a lot of, I mean, and I worked with her for a long time. So I have to remember, like, no, I'm supposed to say Native American. But anyway, one of the things that happened on that reservation is that people would get mad at each other and call the police on each other. And so, but they lived in more open, they live more openly. Mm-hmm. So in a lot, so some, yes, there's systemic racism, but there's also, it's harder to, you don't know about abuse going on in a house with a gate around it where neighbors can hear each other through walls.
Yeah.
So there's, I'm just saying there's other reasons, but also it's, if you're, I saw plenty of white people in big trouble the year that I spent in a private criminal defense firm, plenty of them. And they, one of the issues that you had dealing with these white people in big trouble is that they had a lot of trouble comprehending the fact that they were in trouble. You know, that because they, and some of it, so anyway, I just want to say, like, we have to just be accurate about the criminal justice system. I mean, there are serious, serious problems, and I saw them firsthand.
Yeah.
But it's not like if you're rich, you get off.
I know that's not an absolute. It's just that I think that there have been some high profile. I mean, look at O.J. Simpson. And, you know, I mean, being that he was a wealthy, beloved athlete, you know, the jury was the jury. And then there was, like you said, the court of public opinion. And it seemed to be that there was this like racial divide there. And so that happens. Yeah.
But the day-to-day nuts and bolts.
Right. Yes. I totally get that. Yeah.
In fact, you know, I think like the story I opened with, that white woman who's like, oh my God, the police lied. One of my very strong memories was, and this was a paying client. So this was a year I spent in a private firm. So he's a paying client. He came in and he was in big trouble. And sometimes it was very hard to make these guys understand.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That they were in trouble. And I remember when we finally got through to him that this was really serious, he looked at me and he said, I knew I was pushing the envelope, but I didn't realize I was violating 5 federal statutes.
Wow. Interesting.
And because he was pushing the envelope, he was kind of like doing things with the money he shouldn't have really been doing. And there was, you know, we had to plead that one out because he was guilty and we just had to get the best deal we could for him.
If you look though at somebody like Harvey Weinstein, who, you know, was able to rape women, and then if they wanted to take him to court, then basically it was the NDA thing, or it was the, like, we'll pay you money and then you're never allowed to talk about it again. And these victims felt like they didn't have the resources to, they couldn't afford to basically stay in court and fight. And so they took the settlement and they had to promise to never talk about it again, which gave him the opportunity to continue doing what he was doing. And so that's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying every white person gets off. I'm just saying that there are a certain number of, and you know, some of them are black men. Eventually, Bill Cosby was found guilty, but it took like 60 some women because once again, he was a beloved you know, wealthy figure in our country, even though he was a black man, he was still, he had that kind of privilege.
These are the high profile. I've also had clients who they get away with things and get away with things and get away with things, and eventually they get caught.
Right. This well, and that's what I'm hoping with Trump.
I mean, I had a client who, oh man, he just pushed his luck. I mean, this was very common.
Yeah.
That, you know, so the idea that someone gets caught the first time they do something is also like not realistic. Like they, like in the real world, people get caught when they push their luck a little too far.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what I saw is that, and because we don't live in a police state, there's a lot of crime that doesn't get charged.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I'm totally
a lot
there
of
with
it
you.
Out there.
It's just,
so
I think like the overwhelming.
You know, people push their luck. People get a little arrogant. You know, they think, I had a client who was making $20,000 every time he ran a bit of drugs from one place to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had just stopped, you know, if he would have just stopped, but you know, it's like it's
the temptation.
But he didn't stop.
Right. Well, yeah, he was getting money, and then there's the thrill of it. Yeah.
Once more, just push your luck. So
Anyway,
no, I mean, the justice system definitely needs a lot of reform. I'm the first to say that. Absolutely. And I'm entirely in favor of relying less on police and jails and prisons, because they do fall more heavily on minority communities. Absolutely. It does fall more heavily. Obvious.
Yes.
I mean, there's no doubt about that. There's no question that it's, you know, for a lot of reasons. And one of them is the systemic racism.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's, you know, I mean, talking to you is always enlightening to me, and I'm grateful for your voice. But I want to know before we cut out, what have you got in the works? Because you're always writing something.
Well, lately I've been thinking about how what's called accomplice liability is going to bring Trump down in these Capitol riots.
Ooh.
Yeah. So accomplice liability means you didn't do it, but you have some relationship to the people, you know, that.
Oh, interesting.
It's right. So for example, if basically to sum it all up in one sentence, if you know there's a crime going on and you in any way assist.
Right.
And one of the crimes that happened at the Capitol was a violation of a law that just makes it illegal to interfere with a process.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do it violently.
Mm-hmm.
So interfering with the counting of the votes, that's a crime.
Oh.
It's not a violent crime,
right.
But it's a crime.
Yeah.
And so the easiest way to get Trump is to hold him to under a theory of accomplice liability for the fact that the voting was delayed.
Hmm.
That's a no-brainer. That's a no-brainer.
Well, that's going to be an interesting read. I look forward to it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I mean, but I always worry about getting people's expectations up too high also, because it's a slow process.
Right.
But from the point of view of a criminal defense lawyer, these accomplice liability statutes, where basically if someone knows about the crime and in any way assisted, even not directly, but they in any way assisted, they're responsible. These, from my perspective, were always a big net, a way for the prosecution
to pull in
everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen that big net work.
Hmm.
And it's also, it's a, you know, I told you that the prosecutors don't like to bring something they're not going to win.
Yeah.
And Trump's defenses that he never wanted anyone to be violent, that defense doesn't have any bearing in here because this isn't a violent crime.
Right, right. Wow, that's great. That's going to be so interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Well, thank you so much for your wisdom. And I always love having you on the show. Before I let you go, though, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Well, I'm on Twitter and I have a blog, and I've also been recording YouTube, these little YouTube videos, because I find it a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of talk for 5 minutes on a topic,
mm-hmm.
and then who knew it's easy to talk for 5 minutes and write 10 pages.
Exactly.
So I also have a series where I sort of talk about the legal issues on YouTube, but I have my blog and Twitter mostly.
So is your YouTube?
And thanks for having me.
Oh, sure.
Even though I always contradict you, I'm always like, well, on the other hand.
No, but that's what I like, because I'm not a lawyer. I'm going from, you know, kind of like a blogger, podcaster, emotional point of view. You're coming from a legal point of view. And so it's good to know, you know, what you're thinking. But and so I welcome it, obviously. But I'm just curious, is your YouTube channel linked on your blog?
Yes. Yeah, so okay. If you go to my blog, there's this little icon. My blog is actually kind of under construction. It's being sort of redesigned in real time. Mm-hmm. But if you go to my blog, it's just terrycanefield.com. Very, very creative name.
But it's easy. That's good.
This is like a YouTube. I have it actually in two places. So I did a series of about maybe 10, literally like 5-minute videos.
Okay.
Where I sort of give an overview of kind of how we got here and getting out.
Perfect. Well, then what I'm going to do, as I usually do, in the Patreon description, I'm going to add your Twitter links and then the link to your blog. So if anybody wants to go to YouTube, sign up, subscribe, all that stuff, just look at the Patreon description of this show. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Author Kimberly, KimberlEY. Don't forget that E. And then you can find my books on Amazon. But thank you so much, Terry. It was awesome talking to you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.